Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe, period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.
And welcome to the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. I'm your host and normally GM, Alex Newell, and with me today I have...
James Ross.
Bryn Monroe.
Ben Meredith.
And there's no Lydia Nicholas today, who is normally our fifth, but sadly couldn't be here because she's all successful.
Yeah, she's off being impressive.
Being really impressive.
Doing talking about the future.
Yeah, so we'll be covering our Season 1 catch-up without her. But this is a catch-up intended for either people who are brand new to the podcast and saw a daunting number of incredibly well-made episodes and thought, you know what, I might get a catch-up first, and old listeners who have been listening over the course of more than a year at this point and are trying to remember everything ahead of the season two. With that in mind, we should probably start telling people about the world that our story happens in. So, the world as it stands geographically is more or less the world as we have it now, by which I mean, you know, all of the continents are there, broadly speaking, all of the countries are there. Historically, very different, because in this world, magic is real. It is set in the time period of 18...
It's a vaguely Georgia-Victorian post-industrial revolution.
It's explicitly ahistorical, so we've mashed up lots of different bits of the 19th century, stuck them in a blender and strained out the tasty treats.
So you can sum it up with Lord Byron and Albert Einstein, both living at the same time right now.
One can only assume that they are best buds based on nothing at all. But yeah, it's deliberately ahistorical, and like we're saying, magic's real in this world and has been made into lots of industrial processes. Because, yes, you may not have a telephone, but if you have the ability to contact people magically over a long distance and it's fairly easy to do and you have someone specialised in that job, you've basically got a telephone.
Yep.
So a lot of the world will be using a lot of magic to replicate things that are normally achieved with technology. One of the major differences is to do with also the fact that obviously other sentient races are there. Dwarves are there. They occupy a lot of Greenland and are free to move around the rest of the world that humanity occupies a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Elves exist. They are much rarer and they tend towards being in the Americas. And orcs exist, and they tend towards mountainous regions. And gnomes exist. They are pretty heavily integrated into humanity, along with halflings. That said, humans have a bit of a weird situation, because a very, very long time ago, Rome existed. And as far as the history of this world goes, Rome was not a nice place. Rome was being mean.
They did bad magic.
They did bad stuff. It's all a bit shrouded in ancient history. At which point, the meritocrats appeared, a collection of incredibly powerful dragons.
Ancient, wise.
Wiser than humanity, certainly. And basically shut Rome down hard and decided that humans were just too
not responsible
erratic,
enough.
Too irresponsible to be in charge of their own fate. So they divvied up, basically, portions of the world and aspects of humanity that need monitoring. Things like transport, the care of the poor, money, etc., and started trying to steer humanity towards a bit of a more productive, less destructive, and altogether more peaceful growth. And that, broadly speaking, was the history that led us to the world as it stands now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within this world, obviously, each of our protagonists are playing a character, so it's worth probably going around and introducing those. Who do you play, James?
I play Sir Bertrand MacGuffingham, who is a powerful knight, and mechanically he is a fighter, is his class. His class is also aristocratic. and he is the now orphaned last son of the House of MacGuffingham.
Whose
crest is the Maltese Falcon. See what I did there. And in terms of his personality, he is very much Boris Johnson without, you know, the touch of the interests of the working man. Yeah, I mean, he's a terrible human being. But he is a noble and proud hero and representative of the House of MacGuffingham and its grand traditions because regular listeners will know, a contract which governs his inheritance. Basically, the House of MacGuffingham is in debt up to their eyeballs and
then a
will
little
be
bit
on.
Further.
Yep. So the conditions of the credit that has been extended to it are part of a supernatural contract with a sinister law firm of creepy looking gnomes.
Harkness, Harkness, Darkness, and Sphinx.
That's the one.
Sound a lovely chap.
Yep. So if Bertie has to adhere to the terms and appear publicly heroic at all times. Otherwise, he'll be exiled for all eternity to a flaming poo dimension.
Effectively, you are the least chivalrous person ever, held by a Damoclesian sword to the most chivalric code of conduct possible.
Yep.
And yourself, Bryn?
I play Hamid Salah Harun Al-Tahan. He is a lovable halfling, and he wants to be a hero more than anything else in the world, even if sometimes he is not quite cut out for it.
Comes up short.
Sorry. Is that a halfling joke?
That is so racist. That, and because it's out of character, this is a problem. Just FYI.
Just do it in Bertie's voice next time.
Ha, you're rubbish because of what you are, not who you are. There we go.
That's actually a really nice little sample of basically Bertie.
That is it.
He has a propensity to cry and or vomit every time the going gets tough. Hamid is from Egypt originally, but he's grown up mostly in Britain. And he met Bertie at university. Mm-hmm. They're old university friends. And his family owns the largest banking corporation based in Cairo, which is one of the world's biggest cities. So he comes from money in a serious way.
Oh, yes.
He thinks he's a wizard. He's wrong.
Extremely so.
Which we haven't explored in any great detail yet, actually. Right.
Apart from Hamid developing draconic traits and going, oh, why have my hands gone weird and scaly?
Yes.
That's probably fine.
Mechanically, Hamid is a sorcerer and he has the draconic bloodline, which means he's gradually turning into a dragon, but he hasn't figured this out yet. So,
as far as he's concerned, he's still a wizard who's just getting really good at learning.
Yeah, wizardry's easy, guys. I don't know why they all have to study so much, because it's just coming to me naturally.
And all this spellbook guff.
Yeah.
And his body's going through a lot of changes.
Wizard puberty.
Yeah.
So, you know, tantalising plot lines for season two. Ooh. You should definitely listen.
Indeed.
Yeah, but he wants to be a hero, basically.
And why does he want to be a hero?
We don't know! I mean, obviously I know, because I've written a background. But unlike the rest of these losers that I'm surrounded by, I haven't been forced to reveal it by events in the series yet.
You don't know what we haven't revealed yet.
Yeah. Also, hang on a minute.
Ooh.
Not much Zolf backstory's come up, apart from the bit where I got arrested. But that's
look, it's not a
that's recent history. That
it's
is
not
recent.
A competition.
It is. And look, who could be the most mysterious?
So welcome to Rusty Quill Gaming, a race to the bottom. Yeah.
Which Sir Bertrand MacGuffingham would pursue with great enthusiasm. Carry on.
Hey.
So, who are you playing, Ben?
I am playing Zolf Smith, who is a dwarven cleric of Poseidon, who started off in the West Country, and from what we've been told, there's a bit of a blur, but something happened, and he took to sea with the Navy, but then his ship was destroyed.
Indeed.
He almost drowned, and during that time found his faith, and then he hooked up with some pirates for a bit.
Mm-hmm. Decided to sail the piracy.
Is hooked up with pirates a pun? Because if not, it should be.
That is retroactively a pun.
Hey!
That's a retroactive boom. Seems
I'm not
if
sure.
That were a competition, I would have won, Ben.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about this. That sounded a bit rigged.
Oh, no.
Moving on.
That's all right. I'm not literally a comedian, so I but yeah, so he did that, decided he didn't quite like it, wants to be a little bit more ethical, so decided to become a mercenary. maybe the thought process there wasn't that good. But yeah, basically...
There's no reason you can't get paid to also do good things.
Yeah. So why does he want to be a hero? Mainly because he's spent a lot of time doing some quite bad things and feels a bit guilty about it.
And I put this to the rest of the group. We are required to introduce Sasha, of course, the final part of our party. However, me being extensively familiar with everyone's backstory, feel it's probably worth you all introducing her rather than me.
Oh no, so this is a remembrance of what we've heard in the episodes, because we don't know any more than the listeners do.
She's called Sasha Rackett.
Indeed.
And Rackett is the chief crime family that reside within Other London.
Which is the original London, London as we know it, which got built over. And Upper London is now where all the well-off people live.
So here's a bit more of the story world, which is relevant mostly to Sasha rather than every other character. Originally, London existed. And then, during the reveal of the new lightning rail system, an enormous flood ended up being caused.
It's
which
all Tesla's fault.
Yeah, classic Tesla. So he ended up flooding the majority of London, and at that point, as the world banded together, because the meritocrats see a disaster and they help, it was, whether wisely or not, decided that the construction of London would best be built on higher ground, namely, London again. So they built on top the new London. It's shiny, it's clean, it's very, very well maintained. But underneath, sadly, and under London, and other London began to grow and has taken root.
It's basically a city-sized slum.
Exactly. Hidden out of sight, out of mind, beneath London as it stands now.
So that's where Sasha comes from.
Yeah.
And as far as we know, she had a mate called Brock, who she was very fond of. Mm-hmm. And
who disappeared mysteriously a couple of years ago now?
Significantly more than a couple of years ago.
Okay.
He disappeared a long time ago.
Okay. And then...
She had a mentor who was that gnome dude we met that time.
Well, that's Beaming Gusset.
That's the one.
Yep.
But she had another one as well, who was that?
Beaming Gusset is also my burlesque name, just in case. Carry on.
And Rakefine was the other
yes,
benefactor?
Yes, Rakefine. She had a benefactor called Rakefine, who most of you know little to nothing about. He just
mentioned
existed.
Once. Yeah.
And she was sadly beholden to the crime boss known as Barrett, who was not a nice person.
He seemed lovely when we met him.
He was very polite to Hamid.
Yeah, look, this is the thing. Polite is not the same as lovely.
We need to
address
this.
I think you'll find it is.
Bertie can be very polite. But
welcome to an ongoing topic for the podcast. And Sasha, as we joined her at the first time, was actually escaping her past when she ran into the party. And broadly speaking, that's the group as we have it.
Yeah, and I don't know if we understand Sasha's motivation, but she certainly wants to escape from her past.
I think it's because we're her first, like...
group of friends.
Friends who aren't controlling her in some way. This is her first, like, choice, apart from running away from the Barrett gang. I don't want to put words in Lyd's mouth, but that's kind of the impression that I'm getting from the stuff. This might be completely wrong.
Anywho, so there's a very brief overview of the story world, a very brief overview of our main characters, and at this point we should probably try and blast through some plot. There's a lot of it, so you have to remember...
53 episodes, I believe.
We are going to be going through this at some pace. So let us start with... Where did we meet our characters?
So, basically, fate brought us all together. Zolf was running a mercenary company.
Starting
a mercenary company, which Bertie signed up for. Mm-hmm. And they bumped into Sasha in the street as she fled from a pair of Barrett's thugs. Hamid basically just wandered past, and seeing Bertie, his old university mate... He decided to join in as well.
Let's not skim past the gritty detail of Hamid having gambling away himself, depressed.
I think we can definitely skip over that gritty detail.
Just happened to,
I think
in
it's
a depressed
barely relevant.
Slump, run into an old mate and decide it might be time to do something about his life. I mean, just throwing it out there.
Basically, Hamid's sad, let's point and laugh.
I don't know if we ever discussed the fact that he had been cut off by his parents. I mean, it's probably obvious since, you know, he's now adventuring for money rather than living off his parents' wealth.
Well, we definitely know that they wanted him to go through university and he dropped out, so that's somewhat of a disappointment.
So, you managed to deal with the thugs of Barrett and in so doing meet and introduce yourselves to Sasha, who ended up attaching herself by reason of... You're all quite big and numbers will help me because there's a lot of people after me.
And she got an invitation, that was an invitation with air quotes, obviously helpful, on a audio format, an invitation from Barrett to go and visit him and talk about the situation. So the four of us decided to go to a party at Edison's house instead.
I believe you were corralled into that by a previous associate of Zolf's known as?
Harringay.
That's the one. And yeah, they needed...
He hired your mercenary company to run security at the party.
Basically, and we did really well. Mm. Nothing went wrong. It was great.
It was a really good party.
Yeah, that's it. That's the rustic
one. It was an excellent party, the creme de la creme.
Well, the thing is, we were supposed to be running security outside, but because it, obviously Bertie is part of La Creme de la Creme, on our way there, he bumped into some other old friends, Wellington and Chessington.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all got invited inside the party rather than running security outside the party. Because that's what happens when you've got all the privileges in the world.
Bertie checked his privilege and it was great.
Still there.
Natural 20 on privilege.
Yeah.
So, how did things go? One can only assume really well.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah, so
they're like everyone saying those little pyramids. It's really fancy.
Well, there were ambassadors there, and they were being spoiled.
Oh. How dare you insult me by presenting me Ferrero Rocher at a posh party? If the party is posh, I demand a proper truffle, not some cheap knockoff made of.
Oh.
I'm sorry,
biscuit with Nutella inside.
Absolutely,
it basically is.
They're a cheap chocolate. Not
so, what
proper.
Was the point of this party?
So Edison was presenting his new invention.
Which was?
The Simulacrum.
Which is?
A giant robot.
Yeah.
Which can?
Make more of itself.
Yes.
It's basically the magical singularity.
Pretty much. It is a creature, let's call it a robot. Who knows what it is? We never really got into detail.
Golem, probably. Mm.
But it was made of the finest stuff. The workmanship on it was amazing.
About 10 foot tall, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was basically, you know, humanoid plus, but was also capable of easily making more of itself.
Self-replicating, so it's a von new man.
Cannon!
You're welcome. That was good. Thank you.
That was more a groan of realisation of like, that's very
what that
clever.
was mechanically weak humour, but really, really well executed in the referencing
thank
side.
You.
What I don't think we've ever addressed is whether this simulacrum follows the three laws.
Why didn't we address that? Because, I mean, surely you'd have had chance during the
auction.
So,
okay, the reason that things didn't necessarily go according to plan is because the security team hadn't necessarily been doing their jobs, and so the room exploded. Just a little bit.
Well, people exploded the room. There was an attack, and during the confusion...
Everything exploded,
and they stole the simulacrum along with a notebook that Edison had, and also killed him.
Yes. So, the simulacrum disappeared, and I believe you all helped rescue a bunch of people.
So, yeah, we woke up and the room was on fire, which is never the nicest way to wake up. Some of these terrorists were still in the room, the bombers, so we fought them. We tried to chase them.
Sasha chased them
quite successfully compared to the rest of us. The other of us spent most of that fight desperately trying to evacuate the few remaining alive civilians.
So you did a decent enough job. Sadly, Sasha's pursuit got a little bit curtailed because they had made preparations. Turned out it looked like they had escaped underground from beneath the stage and blew up the route behind them. So you managed to escape that region, rescue a bunch of people.
Yeah, so Hamid and Zolf teamed up to save a bunch of foreign diplomats mm-hmm. that had been at the presentation, whereas Bertie, along with his good friend Colgate,
successfully saved
Lord Byron from the flames.
True. And after that, I believe we ended up being outside, and in the fallout, Harringay had an extra job for you, I believe, for your mm-hmm. mercenary band.
Yeah, he decided to deputise us and have us investigate the bombing because the rest of the London security forces would be dealing with other bits of the fallout.
And quite frankly, an enormous amount of the people in charge of all of that were dead or injured.
Yeah,
not right,
including...
Not right.
The head of the
meritocratic forces was at that party at the time.
Because the British royal family no longer exists, as far as I understand.
Well, they're part lizard anyway.
So how did that go, your investigation?
Kind of well. We went into the sewers, swam in a lot of poo.
Yeah, that happened.
But managed to retrieve the most of the physical form of the simulacrum.
Having found it had been?
Dismantled.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and dumped into the sewers.
And you didn't even collect all of it, just as much as you could.
Yeah,
and then,
that's
yeah.
fine.
But you did provide Harringay with the instructions of where to dredge for the rest.
Yes. Yep. And we don't know if that dredging project... ever bore
no, we've been quite
smelly, smelly robot fruit.
Yeah, kind of busy.
That's my other burlesque name.
Smelly, smelly robot fruit.
It's a spin-off, it didn't do so well.
Good grief.
Yeah.
But I believe that also finally brought you into contact with other London for the first time briefly.
Yeah, a little bit. But then we kind of went up, handed it in.
And then, yeah, and then Haringey said we should continue investigating because we sort of worked out that the people who dismantled and dumped the simulacrum had headed down into other London. Mm-hmm. And we thought that our new friend Sasha, who knew other London very well, would help us follow the trail there.
Mm. Although she was, shall we say, reticent to return to a place that was full of hostility and clearly incredibly dangerous for her.
Mm. But we did it anyway.
Well, we were getting paid at that point, and exactly. The shiny, shiny currency helped persuade her.
So yeah, we went down and unfortunately got ambushed by Barrett's gang after, I think we mucked around with some staircases for quite a while. But
turns out eel in a bun makes for less effective weaponry than you'd initially hoped.
It's true.
Yeah, our stealthy sojourn into other London was not stealthy.
And
yeah.
Again,
I'm incredibly stealthy. What? Shut up.
To represent for Sasha, by the way, she was doing an excellent job.
She was,
by the
yes,
way,
that's true.
She was just hamstrung by an enormous amount of aristocrats walking through a slum.
The rest of us were not so much fish out of water as giant, shiny metal objects in water, and all the fish were looking at it, going, "What the hell's that?"
Yeah, it didn't go well.
So we got dragged off and taken to Barrett's headquarters, mm-hmm. which is exactly where Sasha never, ever wanted to go again.
Ever.
So that went well for her.
Yeah.
So we're up to about episode 11 now, and I'd just like to say, I think episode 11 is really strong. There's some lovely character moments for all four people in that episode. That's the episode where we chat with Barrett.
I like that one.
If you're doing some sort of sampling of season one,
it's a good one.
It's a nice early one that I would recommend listening to, because I felt like it was the first episode where I went, oh god, this is quite good, isn't it?
Well, thanks.
Well,
another event in episode 11 that I should mention, which again it may be relevant in season two, I just don't know yet, it depends on how willing Alex is to torture me, is that Hamid ends that episode with a magic ring as a gift from Barrett. It's a ring of communication of some kind which he cannot remove.
The deal being that he would be willing to take that ring in exchange for a bunch of information, because what did Barrett happen to know? Where all of the people you were searching for was.
Everything was going on,
Barrett knows everything that's happening.
How convenient.
There.
If Hamid needs to contact anybody through it, he just holds up to his face and goes, ring, 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 ring.
Oh.
2 out of 10, try it.
That was brilliant. That was genuinely very good, Alex.
That was
It's simple
awesome.
And effective.
Yeah.
And you happened to run into an incredibly sinister, cowled figure at Barrett's as well, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Again.
A Dementor. Basically, it was a big, spooky Dementor.
Oh, he had a horrible voice, too.
Knew some secret things. It did some whispering into Barrett's ear, and it got a bit mystical and odd.
Yeah. I feel like there's stuff in that episode that is going to come back into the plot at some point.
I'm sure there will be no ramifications for any characters for anything that's ever happened.
But then there was episode 12. And episode 12 features everyone's favourite NPC.
Yes, so this is another case where things got made canon whether that was going to happen or not.
Look, you're welcome. You're welcome.
You named him.
Yep.
We stopped off at a tavern and accidentally invented eel quiche.
And you ran into
Greg, it was Greg.
Oh, Greg.
Greg, innkeeper extraordinaire.
Yes, so after our brief stop at the pub, we carried on to the terrorist compound.
So there were a couple of guards out there who had attack dogs.
They had one attack dog.
One attack dog and one incompetent dog.
Yes.
And guess who Bertie picked?
So using advanced eel in a bun skills.
Yes. And being a statue.
And, how could I skip that?
Bertie, the human statue.
Still needs a spin-off.
It's a
let's take it in then.
It's just him standing still.
Yeah,
it's
really easy because it's just one sound bed and that's it.
It consisted of Bertie pretending literally to be a statue as the guards approach.
And doing it extremely well.
Doing an amazing job so that you could get the drop on them, ambush them, and then in the process somehow tame an attack dog to be your bestest buddy ever.
That fight was brutally efficient, unlike every other fight we'd had up to that point.
That went great. Well, because at the time, I think we were all feeling a bit bad.
Yeah,
we
were so incompetent.
Stomped, and then, just took him down in, like, 2 rounds or something.
And you ended up with your pal Brutor.
Yep.
So you proceeded to the compound.
Yes.
Yeah, so we infiltrated the compound, and then was another big fight, which also went really well. So,
thanks,
I mean,
largely to Sasha.
Yeah, Sasha snuck in, got the drop on them. Bertie, again,
literally
bisected
someone
this
time.
So mechanically reduced them to lower than minus 10 hit points, so they were allowed to just be dead.
Ooh. And Sasha, meanwhile, coming up sneakily from up top and coming down, managed to take out the incredibly well-constructed, hours-spent NPC magic user
before
it could do
pretty much anything.
Anything.
She squashed the boss. I think it was two crits in a row.
Yeah, it was something. It was horrendous. Hamid spent most of that fight vomiting in a corner.
Although I believe there was a massive explosion.
You're jumping the gun.
Am I jumping the gun? I apologise.
After we'd taken down all the enemies, we started to explore the compound.
Of course you did.
Turns out the other bit of the compound we hadn't yet gone to and didn't need to go to and had been specifically warned against by the enemies we'd captured.
But Sasha hadn't told anyone. Only Sasha was warned. And she's the one who went and opened the door.
Warned by one of the terrorist fighters.
The sexy one.
The one who ran off by the rooftops with some quite acrobatic skills.
Sasha was quite smitten.
And I believe made a certain impression.
So it was all a fluster.
Yeah. Now there was a massive explosion.
Sasha checked the bit of the compound that was irrelevant to the plot and she'd been specifically warned against going into. And it exploded.
Yeah, it was full
in
of,
her face.
It was full of napalm.
It was a really big explosion as well.
It was extremely explosive.
It was perhaps even more of an explosion than the explosion that had hit the presentation of the simulacrum.
So, yeah, Sasha was briefly knocked unconscious, very rapidly approaching death, but you managed to...
Yeah, and she gained quite a... I was going to say fetching, it was horrible scar, which was a burn down the side of her face and neck.
Mm-hmm. And that was Zolf, Cleric of Poseidon, after having a little bit of an issue when it came to...
Alright, so I set a fire and thought I was very clever, and then it turned out the thing we needed was in the place that I set up fire, so I ran back and put it out.
So, we found a notebook, containing lots of juicy and useful
clue written on it in big, helpful letters.
The reason everyone went, ooh, there is because we're all remembering how lovely the handwriting was.
As I repeatedly point out, a good GM would have produced an actual physical representation of that notebook.
Basically, you opened it up and just stuff fell out of it. Just so much stuff fell out of it.
There was a list of six very clear, pointed clues, which we're going to spend the next six seasons pursuing,
yeah,
I assume.
One per season, yeah.
That's my assumption. The other issue we had at this point was Zolf wanted to drown everyone.
Well, that's because you don't get faith for that sacrifice. And Poseidon is not a nice god.
He's a fair god.
He's neutral. Like, he's not a good god.
But he's not... Yeah, he's not so much on the kindness and the forgiveness thing.
No. Although, he sends mixed messages.
He really does. One could say he's tempestuous.
Ugh.
Fickle.
Ugh.
So yeah, you want to drown everyone. It turns out the rest of the party, and by the rest of the party I mean only like one and a half of you maybe.
Mostly Hamid objected very strenuously. You can tell how strenuously Hamid's objecting to something because his voice gets higher and higher pitched. Which is a character choice I'm really glad I made.
Yes.
At least you don't have an accent. I say accent, I'm using that in the broadest possible definition of the term.
So, what happened next?
We took our captives back to Haringey and were richly rewarded.
And then we find out who the leader of the attackers were.
It was Byron's sister.
Ah. And she didn't really like Byron. In fact, she kind of hates him.
Like, quite a lot.
Yeah.
Funny that.
Yeah. I think it's probably because he's a layabout poet that only just takes opium.
That's probably what it is. Yeah. Let's say that that's what it is.
I know nothing about Byron, and I'm sentencing that James does, but there was an awesome, I just want to mention on the forums, there was an awesome Byron nerd that turned up and started pinning down the exact date of Rusty Quill.
Wow. Based entirely on Byron's because location.
And works. Yeah. And I was just like, this is awesome.
And the exact opposite of everything.
Yeah, wrong, because we're completely ahistorical.
Yeah.
But I would just like to give a shout out to that person, because I love that level of nerdiness.
That is really impressive. Genuinely very well done. I salute you.
Unfortunately, we kind of asked where the plans were, and she said they'd already been nicked.
Some other person escaped with them.
Somebody called. Let's quickly refer to our notes.
Jeremy,
yeah.
So during the course of the interrogation, we found out that this notebook did not, in fact, belong to Edison.
Bah, 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 bah. Turns out Edison's a fraud. Who could have thought? But he's dead now, so it's fine.
Tesla would have thought that.
No, Tesla would have definitely thought that.
After being handsomely rewarded for returning our captive to now Captain Haringey.
Oh yeah, he got a promotion, didn't he?
Yeah.
We were then hired to investigate the rest of the contents of this notebook.
Yeah, in the same way that Haringey got a promotion, we kind of got a promotion because we were hired by the new leader of the Meritocratic Forces.
Lady Starling.
Yeah.
Yes, and you basically got official status, not so much a freelance mercenary band as a nominally governmentally funded mercenary band.
Yeah.
So that was the end of the prologue.
Yeah.
Episode 17, for those keeping track. 17 episodes formed our prologue.
So if you like the sound of that and want to jump in at series one,
you can start from episode 18.
And stop listening to this episode. Go away. Bye.
No, don't. It's just a break. It's not the end. Come back after the break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, Ben here. I just want to take a moment to thank some of our patrons. Icarus, OKPK Sound, Katrina Salamance, Kat Munn, Jared Holmes, Chris Yost, George Stone, Hazel, May, Stephen Schlebeck, Will Blackstock, Stuart McQueen, Kevin Turner, Simon Freeston, Theo Emerson, Bryn, Laura McCarthy, Jennifer Davis, Kate Chima, Robert Espy. Thank you. We really appreciate all of your support.
And welcome back. The prologue complete.
Yep.
Moving on.
We began season one.
With the task of tracking
down. Well, I think the
most anticlimactic intro ever.
Okay, so the six clues in the notebook were a strange seed that seemed vaguely metallic, mm-hmm. a piece of metal of the same type as the simulacrum was made from, mm-hmm. a little origami piece of paper with a note on it. Was it a swan?
Origami swan.
The name François Henri and some references to cafes in Paris. Some references to research done at Prague University. Mm-hmm. And a safety deposit box key. And so we started out by investigating all six of those leads briefly in London with the plan to then head off across the rest of the world to follow up on them.
Well, when other people are paying for the travel, it seems foolish not to, really. Yeah,
absolutely. And so that plan gradually formed as we found out a little bit more about each of those six clues. But those six clues essentially provided the structure from this point forward.
Yep. So how did you go about those investigations in London?
So the first person we went to see was Beaming Gusset, Sasha's former mentor, who we thought could tell us about the piece of metal.
Mm-hmm.
As he was quite the dealer in artifacts, mechanisms, and all things intriguing.
Absolutely. As we got a little insight into some of Sasha's past.
Sadly finding, I believe, Beaming Gusset's shop a little bit ransacked by Barrett Associates.
Yeah. Mm.
Although he seemed comparatively unfazed.
Yeah, well, they hadn't got any of the good stuff.
Nah.
Kept that in the back.
And then there was something weird about your ring.
Yeah. I had a ring which, unbeknownst to me, had the... like the family crest of Rake Fine.
Apparently so.
Yeah, and he accused me of lying and I got very sulky.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out, no, I got that ring from home and that's all I would say on the matter.
But Beaming could confirm that that was definitely...
He did confirm that I wasn't a liar. Because Sasha very briefly had a bit of an existential crisis of going, oh no, these people I know and now kind of trust have lied to me all along. And she...
Friends are impossible!
Yeah, very briefly almost shattered her world.
We're massively underselling that moment, by the way. She handled that really well. I feel like...
Lydia's generally really good at handling Sasha's sort of... issues with trust.
Lydia's really the most talented person in the podcast. I mean, if
she's
you're
too
not,
talented to be here.
If you're not finding this interesting, I would say it's mostly because Lydia's not here. So you should still listen.
I genuinely
every single,
believe that.
single episode, which Lydia is in, even if you don't like this one.
I agree. And one of the things that Beaming Gusset covered as well was, gave you a bit more info about the nature of the ring on Hamid's finger.
That it probably wasn't directly harmful.
Yeah.
I think is the best he could say. And he told us that this piece of metal from the notebook was... Damascus adamantine.
Mm-hmm.
But it was new.
So I can dip into that one just quite quickly. So adamantine in this story world was a Damascan specialty of metal. And you could always tell the period that it was constructed in by the way the coloration of the metal happens. You get these sort of spiral fractal patterns and so on. The more elaborate the metal, the higher quality it is, and also normally the older it is. And this was interesting because it had little to no markings on it. And given that adamantine hasn't been made for a very long time, that means that whatever was happening in Damascus was very exciting for Beaming and for Sasha, who were into their materials and their mechanisms. But that also meant that you were a bit struggling for where that could have been sourced from within Damascus.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Basically, we decided we'd probably need to go to Damascus at some point.
Yep.
On our grand world tour. Next, we headed to the British Museum to ask about the piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason we went there is because Bertie thought he'd met somebody at a party who happened to be the curator of the British Museum.
Was quite drunk, so didn't remember any of the details at all. Whoops.
I think it was, your phrasing was, it was crystal clear, and that crystal was the crystal of a decanter after being emptied of wine.
Yes. that sounds like me.
Very good turn of phrase.
It was both pithy and entitled, so it sounds about right.
In Bertie's mouth. All right, yeah. Yes, so we were in the British Museum. We found out
very quickly about the piece of paper, but then we got into something of a scrape.
It was Brutor's fault.
So let's go through what the paper, what we found with the paper first, and then we'll go into, distractions.
Yeah, just that we got a location that basically we got told we'd have to go to Japan to find out more.
Also was interesting the fact that the little symbol drawn on it was in squid ink.
Yes.
There's another detail that was mentioned.
Yes.
But that's kind of all we got about it.
Because Brutor, by this point, Bertie's fast friend, who he's been teaching him how to be people,
to mention where this accident happened.
In the MacGuffingham Wing.
Yeah.
There's an extra pun there, because the Falcons.
Hey.
So tell us about the MacGuffingham Wing there, James.
Very fancy. I didn't do the catch-up, so I always can't remember.
I'll probably ask these as I listen to it a couple days ago. So we went in. It's basically got all of the artifacts from Everard's adventures. These include a flesh golem in a big tank.
Yep.
It's basically Frankenstein, but more gross. Frankenstein's monster, sorry. We had a couple of staves from some witches. We had some urns, which are supposed to have the spirits of the bandit lords in them.
Nefertiti's shawl.
Yes, which is an artifact that is a kind of 50-50 chance that you'll put it on and it will suck all the life out of you.
Or
if you're the next person to put it on, it will give you the life it just sucked out, but you can't take it off or you die.
Mm.
Bertie was quite interested in that one. But yes, so Brutor was snuffling around the magical staves.
And broke everything.
Yeah, he knocked one over, it fired into the vases, and they shattered on the floor. And
releasing?
A spooky skeleton popped out! Actually, three of them did.
It was the bandit lords of the Parisian catacombs, released from their urn.
One of them had a crown, the others didn't.
And you proceeded to absolutely annihilate them.
Yeah, there was this whole episode cliffhanger where they popped out, and then we just completely destroyed them. They didn't do much damage. They couldn't. Mm. Yeah, they were just rubbish.
It was nice after after the failings of the prologue to realise we were capable of being efficient and effective in a combat situation.
Yep.
Don't worry, it didn't always stay that way.
Yeah, oh no. So we saw them off. The flesh golem popped out because we broke the tank, so it just kind of flopped and decomposed on the floor. It was hideous.
But it didn't wake up and try to kill us, so we put it down as a win.
That's good.
And blamed it on the skeletons.
Yeah, and then there was a small issue of finance. Because the donations to the MacGuffingham Wing had stopped.
Yes, this is the first obvious sign to the rest of the party that the House of MacGuffingham is not soaring on the warm zephyrs of financial solvency. quite the way that Bertie might have previously advertised it as being. And so he's hit up for a donation and...
Plus damages.
And I think there is...
You referred it to your lawyer, slash gnome.
Oh, yeah, and the lawyers turn up, don't they?
They did.
That was the first time we met them.
They'd been stalking us for a little
while. Yeah.
They turned up without being summoned because they're good at their job. A lawyer should be there when they're needed, not when they're called. And they dealt with that situation, didn't they?
Yep. With more debt.
But you having met the lawyers, they departed with nary a glance for the rest of the party.
Yep.
And then Alex was very kind in providing us with a little bit more of an impetus by having the curator ask us to deliver a message to François Henri, the head of the Ordinateurs in Paris.
Which is the same name that was in the notebook.
And we were all like, ooh, a clue. It's great.
Now, here's a really niche one. Do you remember what you were asked to deliver to François?
Yes, because I've just listened to the episode. It's not very good testing me. yes, it was a transcript of the Rosetta Stone, so they could use their Ordinateur processing power to help to decipher it.
Yes, and this was the point where it became aware for the party that in Paris, they have developed basically the Ordinateurs. They're big, they're clunky, but basically computers. Probably.
I mean, Hamid already knew all about
this. Hamid already knew this because they use for banking.
Because he's a nerd.
It just hadn't come up.
They're basically Babbage's Difference Engine, but magagical and much better than they were.
Yeah,
but the same kind of size and construction.
It's like someone took Babbage's Difference Engine and went, tell you what, with a lot of magic and unlimited space, this could really be something. Yeah.
And it's also worth mentioning Ada Lovelace was mentioned and credited when that was brought up.
So once we'd escaped the British Museum, we next headed to the local branch of the Altahan Bank.
Yep.
To investigate the safety deposit key, and we found that it linked to a deposit box in Cairo.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So Hamid is going to have to go home and face the music / his parents.
Although there was a brief digression there as Byron wandered in, loudly declaring he was Byron again and again.
Yeah, it's weird that.
It turned out he was Figgis impersonating Byron to try and rob the bank.
Yeah, because Bertie turned up, went, oh, I know Byron, and Figgis went, oh no, and just ran for it.
It was terrible. He was awful. I don't know why you ever hired him. What were you thinking?
Pretty bad. Yeah, so there was a climactic high-speed chase involving carriages and jumping, and I stayed inside and got drunk.
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Very drunk. Yeah, so we caught him, brought him back. Everyone was like, oh, brilliant, you're well good. And that was great.
And I believe there was a nice little moment for Hamid there as well.
Oh, God, yeah.
He got a poignant present from his parents.
A slightly outdated present. I believe it was. Yeah.
Yeah, because it was from a time when they still had faith in him.
Oof.
Basically. Had a note saying,
I'm sorry, I'm just having some feels over here. I'll be back with you in a minute.
Basically had a note saying, we're really glad that you're still sticking with your studies and going through university. It was supposed to be sent on orders. Those orders were never given.
We love you very much, but extremely conditionally, provided you meet these conditions, which you're definitely going to. And we aren't going to fail at all.
Yeah, but here are some magic sleeves.
Yeah.
They're great, though. Makes him, he can just wear any costume he wants. Yep. Brilliant.
So our final stop on our whistle stop tour of London, following up on these clues, was to go to Kew Gardens to ask about the strange and mysterious magical seed.
Yeah. So we headed over. Sasha had a bit of anxiety about the city going away and the whole countryside thing being quite
open. She'd barely gotten used to the sky, and then you took her to the countryside. Wasn't
well,
that?
You say the countryside as well. It was Kew.
Which, in that period, was definitely countryside.
It was.
Zing! You're back on board, Brett.
Also, I mean, actually, if we're thinking about it, it doesn't make any sense because Upper London would have... Anyway.
Yep.
But yeah, so that happens and we go to Kew Gardens. We meet Colgate on the steps and he helps us...
To point out, Colgate being one of the people that you helped rescue and helped keep people alive during the bombing of the presentation
of
the simulacrum.
Like a pretty stand-up guy that Bertie knows, one of his friends. So yeah, we go in, we meet George Washington Carver, who is currently... very early on in his career, he's quite young, and was in an internship at Kew.
Yes,
and he was working as Gregor Mendeley's assistant.
Yes, again, and that's who we ahistorical.
Yeah,
ahistorical.
There you go. But yes, so we did that, but we found out that Mendeley had unfortunately been missing because there was a problem with the heating. He went down with a party of people, and they hadn't returned. So we very bravely offered to go get him, mainly because that would be quicker.
Yes,
that was why we were so brave. It was just because we didn't have time to wait. We then went down and we found ourselves in a very spooky basement.
It was really atmospheric and cool. If you've listened to our other podcast, The Magnus Archives, you may realise that Alex is really good at atmospheric creepy horror. And this was him using some of that expertise to provide to Rusty Core Gaming.
Yeah.
So if you like that kind of thing, you could always go back and listen to these Kew Gardens episodes, which were episode numbers...
21 onwards. So 21 through 24.
Don't listen to it for the character or the story. Just listen to it for the audio effects. Like, that's the main appeal of the episode.
That's all audio. If I could, I'd mute all of your speech and just have the soundscaping.
So we go down and we're very confident and we think it's going to go really well. Then we get attacked by two swarms of mandrakes. or like weird mandrakey kind of root seed things that are awful and make us really nauseous, and you can't stab that well.
Yeah.
So they almost kill us.
And then Sasha, again, representing Sasha here.
Yeah.
She almost single-handedly deals
no,
with that.
No, she single-handedly dealt with
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Like, the rest of us were incompetent and useless.
We just didn't have the tools for the job.
I think
so
like
no Hamid, area effect weapons.
Hamid ran away. Both me and Bertie got both Zolf and Bertie got stuck. And did Bertie go down? I think Bertie went down.
I think so
you all went down at one point. Yeah.
So it was all very bad.
And but Sasha managed to rescue all with some expert
some
bombing.
Bombs, yeah. Anyway, so lots of things happen in there. It's all very spooky. There are lots of corpses we find. Hamid almost dies because he walks too close to a frigid moss.
Yeah, the weird cold moss.
Yeah.
Because obviously a bunch of the samples in there have all been just like accidentally released and all that kind of thing.
So, yeah, we have an argument. Zolf wants to leave. Hamid doesn't because he wants to be a hero. So Zolf sulks and gives him leadership temporarily. So, yeah, and then Sasha is...
And doesn't he do a wonderful job of it? That's definitely what I remember.
Any dungeon you can walk away from.
Yeah. But basically, more in the thread of Sasha doing everything, Sasha then walks into the main room with lots and lots of tanks. There's something horrible and big shuffling around, which is assumedly the main antagonist of this dungeon.
Correct.
She stealths it and then finds somebody hiding in a tank from the big shuffly monster.
Yes.
One can assume it's Mendeleev because he's the NPC we need. that would be a bit of a rubbish dungeon if he was dead.
Game design 101 with Ben.
Yeah, and... after that, she warns us about the thing, and we completely destroy the big monster.
You trounce it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even
trash
with
it.
Its support by the sort of plant zombified versions of other NPCs that were down there at the time.
Yeah. That's why two people died.
You
and it quite effectively took Bertie out of the fight as well by constantly pollinating him or something.
Oh yeah, he spent most of his time
dazed
stunned.
And stunned.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet the rest of us took it down.
Yeah. Yeah, so we get Mendeleev out, get him back up to his office. He's very, very thankful. Pays us, gives us a bribe basically to not tell people that Q massively
He rewarded
up.
Us for our heroism.
Yeah, there's a little bit of friction between those two.
Your mileage may vary.
Yeah. But yeah, so basically we cover that up and we go and chill out at Hamid's after that particularly harrowing ordeal.
Well, we tried to go home and chill out, and who was there waiting for us?
The most lovely
the
person
most
ever.
The most irritating NPC of the campaign
oh,
so
he's
far.
Such a nuisance.
Oscar Wilde, what a guy. What a man. Ugh.
I love him in real life. I hate him in this game.
Men want really him, irritating. Women want to be him. Oscar Wilde.
So basically, he broke into Hamid's house and thought that was fine.
Yeah.
And he was he's an investigative reporter, basically, at this point. Or at least a journalist of some form.
That was his cover story.
Apparently. Yeah, he was just trying to get into Bertie's pants.
Yes. And he succeeded.
I think they both succeeded very well. Very double entendre-y.
If you want a powerfully erotic podcast as a prelude to an evening of sensuous lovemaking with a partner or yourself, I strongly recommend this episode. It's pretty it's pretty on it.
I would say that if you want to ever be able to look any other human being in the face ever again, this is the one episode of our podcast you should skip. But you should definitely listen to all the others.
Yeah. And why was Oscar Wilde there beyond just trying to get in Bertie's?
We were famous.
Camp?
Yeah, he was just doing some research.
Oh, and we named ourselves.
The London Rangers.
We're working on the name.
What a name! What a name!
I mean, I having re-listened to it, I think I suggested the Mighty Morphin Mercenary Rangers, which didn't get much traction.
Didn't catch.
I really wish we'd come up with a better name.
We're working on it.
Well, we're working on the name, indeed.
Yeah,
indeed.
So eventually, of course, you all reconvened after Bertie had a night of passionate fun with Oscar Wilde.
Mm-hmm. And, the one thing we didn't mention is that Mendeleev actually helps us, and he mentions the metallic seed, because he's an expert in biology, is supposed to be found, or the people we can talk to find out more about it, are the dwarves who are at Svalbard.
Yes, the dwarves trade in seeds, rare exotic plants, and etc., all at the point of Svalbard.
Yeah. Also, because there's something you might not know about the real world, that is where the International Seed Repository is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where they keep all the seeds just in case it all goes wrong.
Basically that.
So that we can rebuild after the apocalypse.
And at that point, we're going to have to end this episode here, this catch-up episode. Obviously, we'll be back for the rest of what's been happening.
Yep.
But
there's just so many episodes, guys. We couldn't do them all at once.
It's quite a lot. So we will return as soon as possible with the second part of this catch-up. But until then, bye, guys.
Bye!
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit RustyQuill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at TheRustyQuill, or email us at mail@RustyQuill.com. Thanks for listening.
It's fine, you'll just have to do some more feats of daring do. I'm sure the books will balance eventually.
Harkness, hang on. Was it Harkness, Darkness, Sphinx? Harkness, Darkness. Butterscotch Schnapps.
It turned out he was Figgis impersonating Byron to try and rob the bank.
Yeah, because Bertie turned up, went, oh, I know Byron, and Figgis went, oh no, and just ran for it.
It was terrible. He was there awful. I don't know why you ever hired him. What were you thinking?
Pretty bad.
Yeah. Turns out when you have a startup, you just take anyone you can get hold of.
But yeah, so what happened was there was a climactic high-speed...
Wow.
There you go.
Wow. No. I think we need to all process that burn that Alex just laid on me. Because it's going to be smarting for weeks. Wow. I don't have to be here. I could leave right now.
Just you know, you'll have to untie yourself.
Yeah, leave, but, you know, leave the mic.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe, period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun, and see you later.